Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Robin Proud. I'm a member of the program committee. Prairie aspires to be both an open-minded and open-hearted congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or inabilities. Later in the service, we'll invite visitors, guests, or returning friends to introduce yourself so we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of programs. They're presented either by a Prairie member, as today, or a member of the wider community, or by our minister, Sandy Ingham. Our opening words will be read by Evan Creed.
Hello, babies. Welcome to Earth. It's hot in the summer and cold in the winter. It's round and wet and crowded. On the outside, babies, you've got 100 years here. There's only one rule that I know of, babies. God damn it, you've got to be kind.
And for our chalice lighting, Jesse is going to assist me. It's from Albert Schweitzer. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. Our presentation today is given by our member, Johanna Hatch. Johanna has been a member of Prairie since 2013. And a fan of Kurt Vonnegut's writing since she was in ninth grade and read Slaughterhouse-Five for the first time. In her professional life, Johanna is a nurse working in reproductive health. She attends Prairie with her spouse, Evan, and their children, Liam and Aurora. In her limited free time, Johanna enjoys yoga, biking, and of course, reading. So please welcome Johanna Hatch.
As I lug my laptop up here, I'm reminded that I think last summer I did a presentation, but sorry, my printer's broken and we still haven't fixed our printer. So, I have my laptop again. So kind of the way I envision this is, I want to talk a little bit, kind of like a very brief biographical overview of Kurt Vonnegut, his life as kind of, I think, a literary and cultural icon of the 20th century. His life really spanned a lot of the big events in the cultural consciousness of the 20th century. So he's kind of a microcosm of that, as well as my personal introduction to Kurt Vonnegut. I am not in any way a literary scholar. I took one English class in college, but I am a fan. So that's where I'm coming from on this. And then I also want to highlight three kind of main philosophical points, if you will, that are themes that come up in Vonnegut's writing for me. The first is the imperative of kindness, which is from our opening words today. The value and importance of community to our existence as human beings. And then the question of free will and the possibility of humanity. So who was Kurt Vonnegut? Kurt Vonnegut was born in 1922 to his parents, Kurt Sr. and Edith, in Indianapolis, Indiana. He was very, very proud of his Midwestern roots and often talked about his pride in being a native son of Indianapolis. He's the youngest of three children in a family he described as being raised in the tradition of his German freethinker forebears. So he was not raised in a religious household. He was always raised in kind of a non-religious humanist environment. After graduating from high school, he very briefly attended Cornell University in New York, but did not complete his degree there. He dropped out. He joined the Army, as many young men of his generation did. As part of his service, he was deployed to Europe during World War II and was captured actually in the Battle of the Bulge and held as a prisoner of war in Dresden. He survived the bombing in Dresden as a prisoner of war by taking shelter in a meat locker, which is the origin of Slaughterhouse-Five. So it's actually what happened to him. After returning from the war, he married his high school sweetheart, Jane Marie Cox, and then enrolled in the anthropology department at the University of Chicago under the GI Bill. It was this really unique program where you were supposed to stay 5 years and then you'd just be conferred a master's degree, so not getting a bachelor's degree. He didn't finish that program either. So he actually has much formal education, but no degree to his name. After working as a publicist at General Electric, where his brother Bernard worked as a scientist, he was able to begin to start selling enough of his short fiction to weekly magazines to really believe that he could sustain himself as a writer. So he quit his job at General Electric and moved to Cape Cod with his family, which is another sweet connection for me because my family is from Cape Cod, and so it's a little, I feel like it's a little thing that I get to share with Kurt Vonnegut. While living on Cape Cod, Vonnegut opened the first Saab dealership in the United States, which also went bankrupt, which I feel like is just like a little, it's like a very Vonnegut thing to happen to him. And then following the publication of his first novel, Player Piano, he basically continued to support his family on the writings, kind of like from sending short fiction to weekly magazines, because it wasn't really a very hugely commercial success. So at that point, he and his wife had 3 children of their own, a son and 2 daughters. And then in 1958, his sister Alice, who he was very close to, died of cancer the day after her husband died in kind of a freak accident on a commuter train. So their family expanded to 6 children after they adopted Alice's three sons. They raised them along with their own 3 children. And then, so kind of over time, as Vonnegut became more well known, he, like I said, he had no formal degrees, but he was still sought after as a great teacher. He taught at the University of Iowa's well-known Writers' Workshop. And then in 1967, he was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship, which allowed him to travel back to Germany and Dresden and tour kind of the areas where he was held as a prisoner of war and that had been bombed. And then it was after the publication of Slaughterhouse-Five, which I think is the novel that most people most readily associate with Kurt Vonnegut, his most well-known novel. It really pushed him into the national consciousness. It was published, you know, during the Vietnam War. It came to be seen by a lot of people as a very strong anti-war novel and really elevated his notoriety and his success. So that was in 1969, and then in 1971, unfortunately, Vonnegut and Jane, who would be his first wife, divorced as she had embraced Christianity, and that was just something that the two of them could not reconcile living in the same house. So even though they divorced, they did remain friends until Jane's death in 1986. And then in 1972, his son Mark suffered a nervous breakdown and was hospitalized, and that really was very difficult for Kurt to kind of come to terms with, and that really pushed him into his own depression and I think kind of shaped both his relationship with his son and kind of how he thought about himself. The good news, though, is that Mark did recover very well and became a pediatrician and has helped kind of usher his father's legacy after his father's death. In 1979, Kurt Vonnegut did remarry. He met Jill Kremetz, who is a photographer working on a project about American authors. They fell in love, they got married, and then with her, he adopted his 7th child. So he has a very, very large family. Vonnegut continued to write pretty much nearly until the end of his life. His last novel was Timequake, which was published in 1997. And is one of my favorites of his works. And then his last book was entitled Man Without a Country, which was published in 2005, and it's a collection of essays and other nonfiction writings, some of which were his response to the Bush administration and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And then it was a very sad day, but I do actually remember this day. Evan and I were living in Waite Park, Minnesota, in a tiny one-bedroom apartment. That Kurt Vonnegut died in April of 2007, and he was 84 years old. So he lived a long life. His life really spanned the experience of the 20th century. My personal introduction to Vonnegut was, read in the introduction, I read Slaughterhouse-Five for the first time when I was in 9th grade. I wish Sandy was here because she always forgets that we actually lived in very close, pretty close to each other in Western Pennsylvania. I was a freshman at Oil City High School in Oil City, Pennsylvania. And I had an English teacher who, to me, especially living in rural Pennsylvania, I thought she was pretty radical. I thought she was pretty amazing. She really had a lot of limits on her curriculum and what she could teach that was put out by the school district, but she had some very strong ideas of her own and ideas about what she wanted us to be exposed to. She really wanted to challenge us to explore ideas beyond what we might be exposed to. Otherwise, she really wanted to challenge us to kind of question authority. So a book that was really important to her and then became important to me was Johnny Got His Gun by Dalton Trumbo. And she was not allowed to teach it. It was not allowed to be part of the graded curriculum. But she had 10 copies that were signed out to students, and there was a very strong expectation that we were to read it before we finished the ninth grade year with her. So then following that, she also introduced me to Kurt Vonnegut. She pointed me in the direction of Slaughterhouse-Five, and she also introduced me to Margaret Atwood. So that's the year I read Johnny Got His Gun, Slaughterhouse-Five, and The Handmaid's Tale, and literally nothing was the same after that. So pretty quickly after that, I read Slaughterhouse-Five. I don't think I got it the first time I read it. I was 14. I don't think I really understood it all, but I loved it, and I wanted more. So I pretty rapidly went through the limited selection of Vonnegut novels in the Oil City High School Library, but that meant I also got to read Breakfast of Champions, which if you've read it, you'll know every time that I have a martini, I think in my head, Breakfast of Champions, because that's what the waitress says when she puts the martini down, and Cat's Cradle. So that was a lot in that year of my life. And you can see, I think a lot of people come to Vonnegut when they're in high school or college and at that age where they're really wanting to be challenged and wanting to maybe feel like they aren't fitting in. His work has been a beacon, I think, to generations. And then as his works grew over time, there was more and more for us to draw from Player Piano on through Timequake. So like I said earlier, there are three themes that I really want to focus on, which are kindness, the need for community, and the challenge of using our free will for good. So like our opening words said, God damn it, babies, you got to be kind. I think kindness is one of the most central facets of Vonnegut's belief system as expressed in a lot of his writings. These opening words come from his novel, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. And I think they are one of the most beloved and often repeated quotes from Kurt Vonnegut. What those words actually are is Mr. Rosewater, who is the son of a former senator, is asked to give the invocation at the baptism of his neighbor's baby twins. And those are the words that he gave them. That is the basic rule for us, according to Vonnegut. You've got to be kind. And it's not just a kindness that is kind of flip or easy. I think actually what he's looking for, he is mercy and this concept of a really deep kindness towards one another. Like I said earlier, throughout his life, Vonnegut did identify as an atheist. He has identified himself as an atheist and as a humanist, as a descendant of the German freethinkers. But he frequently, very often in his writings and in a lot of commencement speeches that he gave at various colleges throughout the years, comes back to Jesus Christ in the Sermon on the Mount. And I think that's really like his central political and philosophical point is the Sermon on the Mount. He has said a few times, you know, he doesn't really identify as liberal or conservative in our system, but this is what he comes back to. A quote that I love of his, it says, you know, for him, the message of the Sermon on the Mount really boils down to that mercy and kindness, showing mercy towards one another as human beings, even when they don't deserve it, even when we don't really want to. Showing mercy towards one another is, to Vonnegut, perhaps the single most important expression of our humanity. This is a little quote from one of his commencement speeches. He writes, "Being merciful, it seems to me, is the only good idea we have received so far. Perhaps we will get another good idea by and by, and then we will have two." love to. On the subject of community, I kind of went back to another novel of Vonnegut's. It's not one of my favorites. It's one of his weirder ones. Have any of you read Slapstick by Vonnegut? Yeah, okay, so a couple. So it's a really weird book. And Vonnegut himself, when talking about Slapstick, he would give himself a D for that novel. I think he was being a little hard on himself. But, you know, and it got mediocre to poor reviews at the time that it came out. Like I said, it's pretty weird. There's a lot of kind of like stream of consciousness. Part of it is that it was written soon after his sister Alice died. So a lot of this novel is his response to his sorrow about the loss of his sister, who he was very, very close to. In the briefest of terms in trying to describe this novel, it's, so title Slapstick, so you know it's really wacky. That's kind of why he gave it that title, Slapstick. It was subtitled, or kind of a theme throughout the book, is Lonesome No More. In it, the president of the post-apocalyptic United States is Dr. Wilbur Daffodil 11 Swain. there you go. But there you go. Who recently lost his twin sister, Eliza. So he's also mourning the loss of his sister. And he and his sister were considered like child, or they weren't considered geniuses. Everyone thought they weren't quite right as children. Yeah. But as twins, they were essentially, they felt like they were each other's, the other half of each other's brain. So together they were able to come up with these really incredible ideas. And one of the things they came up with was this idea of like, how can we ensure that everyone is cared for and nobody is left alone? And they come up with this really wacky plan, which is everyone gets a new middle name. It's a random object, Daffodil, and a number, 11. Everyone with the same object middle name as you is your sibling. And everyone with the same number is your cousin. And that way we are all responsible for one another. And no one can say that they don't have a family. As with most plans in Vonnegut's novels, none of it plays out as they hope. Like I said, we're in post-apocalyptic United States, and the rubble of Manhattan is kind of the place where this whole novel takes place. But you can see that there's the intention here that that for the creation of a system that would induce Americans to actually care for and about one another. And it's really from this central idea of his that we are not meant to be in this alone. We are meant to get through this life together. And so I also, in preparing for this, read there's a very nice little book, I think it was published posthumously, called If This Isn't Nice, What Is?, which is a collection of many of Vonnegut's commencement speeches and other remarks that he prepared for different meetings of organizations that he was asked to speak at. And a theme that comes up, you can tell he recycles a lot of the themes in these commencement speeches, but one is that, you know, our modern conception of the nuclear family, it is really a modern conception. It's really like a 20th century ideal for our specific culture, is not really enough to support one another. It's not enough. He writes over and over again in these speeches that, you know, a husband, a wife, and some kids are not a family. It's a terribly vulnerable social unit. Now, those of you who get married or are married, when you fight with your spouse, what each of you will be saying to one another actually is, you are not enough people. You're only one person. I should have hundreds of people around me. This idea that being in community is part of what makes us human. You know, and he was a student of human communities, that he did study anthropology at the University of Chicago, but like I said, he didn't finish that degree. He also tried to describe how precious and necessary community is to humans. So he also wrote that as a humanist, quote, since the creator of the universe is unknowable to us so far, we serve the highest abstraction of which we have some understanding, which is our community. So community as an abstraction, but also that which deserves our service. It is important to nurture those communities to enable us to care for one another. And then kind of the last theme that I want to touch on is something that we will revisit in our closing words today, which is one of my favorite Vonnegut quotes. I have it written on all sorts of scraps of paper all over the place. I keep finding it. The idea of original sin and original virtue. And we know, like I kind of touched on Slaughterhouse-Five. I think it is arguably his most well-known work. And one of the central questions that it tries to tackle is the question of free will. So the protagonist, Billy Pilgrim, is kidnapped by the alien, and I've tried to read this in my head a whole bunch of times. Traldafamorians. Let me see again. Tralfamadorians, thank you. It's one of those words you read in your head, but never out loud. Tralfamadorians. They do not have free will. They don't understand the concept of free will. They, unlike humans, as we experience time moving forward, they can experience all of time as once and kind of see it like a mountainscape all at once. So they know what is, what will be. So they don't understand this idea that we have about choosing what comes next. So we read a little bit, and it seems like some actual literary scholars, so people who like really study these things and do this as their job, feel like Vonnegut wrote this as an attempt to show that free will is an illusion, that we don't have as much control over our next step as we would like to believe. But when I first read it as a 14-year-old, and the feeling that I took with me is that perhaps free will is not an illusion, but it's a quality of humans that Vonnegut finds very precious and unique. So the Tralfamadorian said, "If I hadn't spent so much time studying Earthlings, I wouldn't have any idea what was meant by free will. I visited 31 inhabited planets in the universe, and I have studied reports on 100 more. Only on Earth is there any talk of free will." Going back to the Sermon on the Mount, Vonnegut describes mercy and compassion as fundamental human qualities, writing that if Christ hadn't delivered the Sermon on the Mount with its message of mercy and pity, I wouldn't want to be a human being. I'd just as soon be a rattlesnake. A capacity for compassion and the ability to choose goodness and kindness rather than be driven by revenge or greed is not only a defining part of our humanity, it's what can save us from our collective destruction. Over and over again, Vonnegut's characters either fail at this or suffer when others fail. So it goes, as Kurt would say. But Vonnegut also calls on his readers again and again to choose to be compassionate, kind, and decent to each other. Our closing words today, like I said, will come from Vonnegut's final novel, Timequake, and like I said, one of my favorites. Perhaps you are or can become a saint, behaving selflessly and capably. Original sin is just as bad as people can get. Original virtue is the height of our capability. We can contain both. Both are part of our human condition. We are free to choose which way to go. It is this ability, the gift of free will, which gives us the power to choose mercy and kindness, to choose community, even when it is difficult. The ability to choose gives us the power to enact the change necessary to create a more merciful and just world. At the end of his life, in the early 2000s, Vonnegut became a sharp and vocal critic of the Bush administration and their instigation of wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. I think we can only imagine what Kurt would think of the current administration. Some days I feel like I'm living in a Vonnegut novel. So I wanted to pull a little quote from an article written by Mark Leeds, who is an actual Vonnegut scholar and the author of the Vonnegut Encyclopedia. He wrote in this in a recent article, what would Kurt Vonnegut think of President Trump? And I just want to close us out on this thought. And it also comes from Timequake, like I said, which is one of my favorites. "We must realize that we have taken this giant leap backwards and that it will take years to recover what we are losing every day." In Timequake, Vonnegut's alter ego, the science fiction writer Kilgore Trout, sees the catastrophic effects of everyone thinking all would continue to go on without their effort, without their free will having any impact on life. He rouses everyone from their automatized stupor by telling them, "You are sick, but now you're well, and there is work to be done."
Thank you. And I'm sure we'll have some questions or comments.
Well, I think part of, you know, he had 7 kids in his life of various ages, so I probably didn't get very much time alone. He was very active in the American Humanist Association. He found that to be a big part of his community. And I know we do claim him as a famous UU, and I had always been kind of curious, like, did he actually go to church? And it seems like he had been members of congregations and kind of attended sporadically throughout his life, and he did identify himself as such as well. So I think he also had that community. And a lot of his writings talks about some of his close friends who are also writers that he worked with. Well, I mean, I feel like all of his novels are absurd. And I think that was actually one of the things that probably attracted me to his works when I was younger. But I do, I feel like, you know, he uses absurdity to kind of get our attention and then reveals these really profound truths through them. And then it's also funny. Like, who wants to listen to a lecture about, you know, like, you need to be kind to one another or we're all going to die. We have to learn how to live together or we're not going to survive. But we all paid attention to him because he's funny. It's funny and absurd and imaginative, and but at the same time just so full of love. And that's, I think, what I really love about Vonnegut. I think some of you know I briefly spent a year studying in a Catholic seminary. And I think I kind of rattled one of my professors when I was like, oh yes, Kurt Vonnegut is my favorite theologian. And he was like, and I was like, maybe I don't fit in here. That's okay. But yeah, no, I feel like it's hard. I think you explained it very well because it was really hard for me to kind of figure out how to say it. But that I think that what I took from a lot of it is that Vonnegut, you know, is an atheist, is a humanist, is very kind of strident about that and very clear about that. But he is deeply spiritual. And in that, I think also like Vonnegut was really my introduction to humanism as like a spiritual and ethical place to start from, because I was raised Catholic. So I was also a Catholic 15-year-old reading Vonnegut for the first time. It really blew my mind.
All good? Thanks, everybody.
Closing words will be read by Barbara Chatterton.
I got a sappy letter from a woman a while back. She knew I was sappy too, which is to say a Northern Democrat. She was pregnant and she wanted to know if it was a mistake to bring an innocent little baby into a world this bad. I replied that what made being alive almost worthwhile for me was the saints I met. People behaving unselfishly and capably. They turned up at the most unexpected places. Perhaps you, dear reader, are or can become a saint for her sweet child to meet. I believe in original sin. I also believe in original virtue. Look around.
Now greet your neighbor and join us for coffee.